Elliott against State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company.
May it please the court, my name's Mike Elliott, here on behalf of plaintiff appellant Cindy Elliott versus State Farm. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. At the outset, let me say that this is an important case. It's not, as State Farm characterizes throughout its answer brief, de minimis. What it goes to is the essential integrity of the jury system and whether or not a jury is allowed to render a verdict that directly contradicts jury instructions and admissions of counsel. In that regard, you know, this can be a two-minute appeal, frankly, and here's the issue. In the jury instructions and stipulations, all the elements of some degree of harm were made out. You got an accident, you got causation, you got some injury, damages, and loss, you got liability admitted for whatever that was. There's some concern as to the extent of the disagreement as to the extent of the harm. However, those factors are all fixed. Those are all admitted. The jury rendered a verdict. When it was essentially asked how much, they said no.
Well, Mr. Elliott,
yes.
If the injury was de minimis, the jury is free to award no damages. And you've just said there was a dispute as to the extent of the injury. Why doesn't that end it for us?
Well, what we've got, truthfully, is if you look at the structure of the jury verdict forms, you got two of them. One is jury verdict A and verdict B. In A, you've got sort of the two questions. They say, you know, was there injury and harm? Was it, you know, the fault of the defendant? And if so, what are the damages? Well, actually, in A, they don't get the damages, and that's really the crux of this. And what we have in this case is a host of admissions and stipulations in the jury instructions and in opening and closing arguments that say, yeah, there was an accident, and there was harm, and there was causation, and there was negligence. So that requires, in essence, a yes answer on that jury form A. And then, if the jury wanted to get the damages and say, we think if damages are de minimis, then it had that option. But it cannot, as a matter of law, make that fundamental error that contradicts all of the jury instructions, the law in the case, and the admissions of opposing counsel.
That's a
fundamental error of law.
Why then was the jury even asked to make that determination? If it's a stipulation and it's undisputed, my understanding is that shouldn't even go to the jury. The jury then should be limited to determining the amount of damages.
Your Honor, I think that's a great question. And if you look at the Larson and Childs cases, what appears to be in my read of sort of reading through it all is this. They had the same kind of a situation. They had a situation where an accident was admitted, causation, liability, and the only question was extent of harm. They had the same in Colorado. What they did is they went with kind of the same pattern jury instructions. For whatever reason, here in Colorado, up until this point at least, Your Honor, we have, the trial courts have permitted that question as just a sort of a pro forma matter following standard jury instructions to say, well, we're going to give them both jury form A and B. And they get A and they get B if they get A wrong. I mean, I think that's where we are. They got A wrong.
Well, you ask the trial court to instruct the jury that it should only find damages and not causation? Did you ask that at the trial court?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, that is not something I'm intimately familiar with. As I look at it, that is something that if you read through the jury instructions, you read through 2, 5, and 8, that lays out just the roadmap, and it tells you that the answer has to be that there was some degree of harm, some degree of damages. And the State Farm Counsel, both of those opening and closing arguments, said, yeah, we agree. There was an accident. There was harm. She ought to be compensated. There's back and shoulder injuries. Those are all admissions. Now, what that does is it starts to bridge the gap between what you do with just the standard pattern form jury instructions and what is the impact of oral judicial admissions in opening and closing arguments.
Counsel, I just need to pin down a couple of things because I'm sure. A little confused. First, when you talk about the admissions, were there formal written admissions on this point, or are we just talking about counsel's statements in argument?
We have two things, Your Honor.
Okay.
If you look at jury instructions, is it 2, 5, and 8? I've got it in my brief. What they map out is those are admissions and stipulations agreed to by counsel. They're draft traded back and forth.
Okay.
And so the admissions and stipulations are that, yes, there was an accident. It was the sole cause of this Stacy Summers. State Farm is liable for whatever harm occurred from that. Yes, some harm occurred from that. Yes, it was her negligence. So that's the whole yes pattern.
Okay.
Those, to the extent that both counsel and the court signed off on them, I mean, those are written stipulations, admissions that are binding on the court.
Okay.
In addition to that, to the extent there might be any doubt, and I frankly don't think if you read through there's any, if you look at the logical syllogisms there, it's impossible to arrive at any other conclusion, not validly. But in addition to that, you've got oral statements in opening argument by State Farm counsel and in closing argument, where in essence, they're not even essence, in words, they're saying, yes, there was an accident. Yes, she has, she was hurt. Her back and neck were hurt. Sure, she has fibromyalgia. Yes, it's debilitating. We don't, we feel so sorry for her. It's too bad.
Well, let me ask
but we don't think that fibromyalgia was caused, but we agree to the back and shoulder stuff.
Mr. Elliott, this is not a case, unlike some of the cases you rely on, where there was zero damages total. The jury knew that the third-party driver had already settled for $25,000. Was that brought
yes.
to the jury's attention? And they knew the State Farm had paid some $90,000. So your argument would have to be, would it not, that the jury was unreasonable in concluding that she had suffered no more than $115,000? Is that your argument?
No, Your Honor. My argument is that the jury cannot, as a matter of law, find that there was no injury sustained in that accident from negligence of Stacy Summers. That's what that jury form A says. They said no injury from the negligence of Stacy Summers. Well, that is contrary to all the admissions in the cases. Now, if they found correctly as a matter of law and in consistence with the admissions and stipulations and judicial admissions, oral and written in the case, if they'd found that correctly and then gone on to B and then said
zero.
So then that may have been a legitimate way to resolve the case. But here's what happens. If you look at Larson and Childs and Kistler, the issue is not, this is not de minimis. It's not a de minimis case. The jury is not allowed to simply get it wrong. Because in this case, the essence of what they did was they acted irrationally and came up with an irrational first pass at the verdict. And then in getting that one wrong, they can't possibly have gotten the next one right. What they never did is they never considered the question of damages. As a matter of law, they were required to find, yes, there was some harm because the harm was admitted. Then they have to consider damages. They didn't do that.
And as a matter of law, if damages were less than $115,000 total, they should have checked the box, yes, damages, How much? Zero? Is that what they, what would the way, that would be rational, at least.
That would be rational.
And what should they do to implement that judgment, if that's the judgment they came to?
If that's, then they have to fill out the forms right. I mean, they have to follow the law. And, you know, here's the ironic thing. I mean, if you look at, you know, Rule 59, it makes clear the contemplation that sometimes juries just get it wrong. So that we have embedded in our statutory and system and system of rules of procedure, you know, a provision that says if the jury got it wrong, we rely on them. But if it's just fundamentally, irrationally wrong, then the courts, your court, this court, stands as a safeguard to prevent a miscarriage of justice. That is what Larson and Childs are all about. If you look at that case, that's exactly what they say. They say there was an instance it's on all fours, really. It was a case in which a woman was rear-ended. This is both Larson and Childs. Some kind of injuries immediately that didn't seem to be, you know, all that threatening, and then they evolved into some kind of a regional pain syndrome. Well, that's what happened here. This evolved into, you know, Cindy Elliott was hit from the behind, had some injuries, went to the doctor, didn't seem to get better. Those injuries evolved into a more complex pain syndrome. That is a something that we've got 9 different experts that all examined her, you know, questioned her, treated her, and said, gee, this all relates back to this. It, you know, it was this back and, you know, shoulder issue, and neck and cervical issue, and that evolved into this central sensitization problem that sort of sets all your nerves on fire and never shuts them off. And where we're on all fours is the same thing happened in Larson. The same thing happened in Childs. Immediate injury didn't seem all that terrible at front, but what happened is it evolved into something big. And what the courts there said, and that has been, you know, affirmed by the Supreme Court in this state, and there's a whole line of case law that follows it, what they said is the jury is not permitted to get a fundamental question of law wrong and then make a determination or, you know, no determination of damages on it. And that's where we are.
Counsel, you just under 4 minutes left.
I see that.
Mr. Kelly,
yes.
I do have another question. Did you request the jury to make an award of damages for the back and shoulder strain and then a separate award, some separate amount for this other condition that, and I probably can't pronounce this right, fibromyalgia.
Myalgia. And central sensitization.
So did you bifurcate it that way, or was it just all thrown out there? How was this presented to the jury?
From the complaint throughout the end of the trial, how it was presented was it was a request for all injuries, damages, and losses sustained in the accident. There is no doubt that the crux is that these injuries evolved into a broader pain syndrome. However, throughout, and I can give you, and I have a list of some 40-some different references throughout the transcripts by, I think, 10 different experts all talking about how that pain continued from the initial injuries throughout trial. So what we have is throughout, it's as if, gee, something happened here and it transmogrified into something else, and those pain injuries never continued. In fact, those same fundamental initial injuries continued throughout, and they never resolved. They never resolved in large part because they evolved instead. Instead of resolving, they evolved into this broader pain syndrome. And I don't know if I get another minute and a half because of that.
No, you don't. Right. Thank you for asking.
I better stop. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Rob Christofek. This is Natalie Lean. We were the trial counsels at the case, and I can answer some of your questions. And I assume that you have more just because you asked us to come here. We didn't ask for oral argument. Neither side did. And so it was at least a little bit of a surprise to us that we were here.
We have indicated that Ms. Elliott asked for argument.
Oh, well, I'm talking to Mr. Keel. He was kind of surprised, too, about that, but not Mr. Elliott, apparently. Initially, in terms of the instructions, all the instructions were given, agreed to. There were no objections made as to any instructions, verdict form A, verdict form B. Number eight, also. So all of these were given to the jury without objection. There was never any type of bifurcation. There was never any special request for damages only low back or shoulder versus fibromyalgia. The entire crux of their case from the inception was the word fibromyalgia or essential nervous system sensitization. They kind of used a couple different terms in there. And so there was never any kind of difference. I mean, it was just fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia. The difficulty that we've had, the defense in this case, after the fact, is that this is kind of like a shooting gallery where the target keeps moving and keeps changing. Because in the initial, the motion for new trial, it was kind of a manifest weight argument. And then in the opening brief, it was an inadequacy of damages argument. And now in the reply brief, it's something kind of different, which is, well, defendant, you never really got it, which is they couldn't have given verdict form A, ever. So we really didn't have an opportunity to respond to that.
I have a question. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you about that. Was it stipulated that the accident caused some damages, caused some injury? And let's set aside for the moment what that injury might be. And if so, how can the jury rationally put the word no in the space on verdict form A where it says, was this accident the cause of the injuries?
I understand, Your Honor. Judge Jones, in terms of, first of all, the stipulation, the doctor that we called said that there was a very mild shoulder strain and a low back strain, resolved within a day, 2 weeks. So we were essentially bound to say that that accident caused something. And remember what we're talking about. We're talking about an accident that happened in September of 2002. So an injury that resolved by October of 2002. So that by the time this thing goes to trial in 2007, the jury would be faced with, if somebody had really asked for that, what's the value of a shoulder strain 5 years ago?
But that you're conflating the issue of the amount of damages with causation of damages. My question goes to causation.
I understand.
The jury is told, and you just concede, that there were damages caused by this accident, some damages. Okay, what exactly they were and how much they're worth, okay, we'll fight about that. But there was something caused by this accident. So after the jury answers yes to the first question, were there injuries? Yes. How can it rationally answer no to the question on causation without contradicting the stipulation?
I understand, Judge. Judge, actually, verdict form A, which we would have, you know, said something about had we been given the opportunity, had two questions. And the first question is, did the plaintiff, Cynthia L. Elliott, have injuries, damages, and losses? Of course, they said yes to that. The second one was the negligence of Stacy Summers a cause of any of the injuries, damages, and losses claimed by the plaintiff? Claimed by the plaintiff, the only thing she ever claimed in the entire case was fibromyalgia. She never said, I have a low back strain, give me money. I have a shoulder strain, give me money. I've been inconvenienced for a minute, give me money. The only thing that she said, I'm certain you've looked through the 19 witnesses and all of the evidence. Consistent through that was fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia.
Well, that's your closing argument said, you know, that you denied fibro, and if I can use a short term, because I don't want to get the second syllable there, second and third. But then you said, so what's the value of low back and shoulder strain? Be fair. I mean, it effectively seemed to be contemplating you got to give her something because something was caused by the injury. Now you're saying it's not what she claimed, which I mean, you certainly, from the argument, seems to be understanding that at least lower back strain was part of the case. And you're saying make that the only part of the case. Don't go further on the fibro part.
Judge, you know, not again, I just do kind of want to go back to this. in terms of the verdict form A, that was the jury did specifically what they were asked to do. I mean, this is what was given to them. There was no objection to this wording. And so in terms of that, I mean, it seems very clear they did what they were asked to do. We don't believe that there was any confusion. I mean, this makes perfect sense.
You shouldn't have been given that verdict form. If you'd objected, then you would have had to say you only give them one verdict form, I guess. Is that how you would have handled it?
Well, we would have dealt with something in an instruction conference. I mean, there was no conference. There were no objections. These went in as, you know, just like this. And so, yeah, I don't want to get into the doctrine of invited error because there's that. I mean, there's the entire series of case law about when you take part in drafting instructions and you don't make an objection.
I think, though, Judge Connolly's question is, by virtue of your closing argument, weren't you conceding that the plaintiff was, in fact, claiming damages for back and shoulder pain?
Judge, I'm actually going to say no, I'm not, because to gain credibility, when you're standing in front of a jury, I mean, it's important to not lose credibility. We talked about that. I mean, we talked about what my doctor said, and that's important for the jury to understand that the doctor is, that's what he said. In terms of the value of that, or did I say be fair? I certainly said be fair. Again, to a certain extent, I have to try to remember back 2 years to what my inflection was, what, you know, what the demeanor was of the jury, whether or not I kind of said, you know, the value of the shoulder strain, be fair, be fair. I mean, that's kind of a hard one to really go back and pick up on what was happening at the time. If you notice, earlier in the case, I talked about entitlement to some money. Well, here we're kind of invading the mental process or stepping into the mental process of the person who's doing the argument or defending the case, which is you never really, at least in my perspective, lay it all out for the jury. You kind of want them to figure some of it out themselves. You don't want to sit there and just preach, because you do that, generally you don't get, you know, the good result. Nobody wants to be told what the answer is. Was she entitled to some money? Probably. Absolutely. Did she get money? She got $25,000. She also had $90,000 worth of unrelated medical care that was paid to her. It's not if I'm to be faulted for not laying it out to the jury and saying, and now that's what I meant, because one day this may go up in a record and you need to read it all to understand what the trial counsel was thinking, or whether or not they were getting it and nodding their head at the time and saying, yes, Christopher, we understand what you're saying. I can't remember exactly. But there was clearly evidence and clearly other things going on that the jury could easily and said, yes, she's entitled to money. Yes, she got money. You'll notice that within that entire record, never once did I say, and she's entitled to money for the low back or the shoulder strain from this accident, from State Farm, from this defendant. That's not in there.
So within the meaning of the jury verdict, the injuries, damages, and losses claimed by the plaintiff, in your view, are the injuries, damages, and losses that exceed the $115,000 already paid to her, which are claimed on the basis of fibromyalgia.
Exactly right.
So when the jury says no, they find that there was no additional loss beyond that which had already been compensated.
I mean, a very fair way of looking at that, yes.
And what was it? This is a little different than I think most of the other cases where courts have set aside verdicts, because this is an underinsured context, isn't it, as opposed
yes,
to a direct suit. So what was the instruction on damages? Is the damages what the plaintiff has not already been compensated for, or what is the?
Judge, it was an interesting kind of concept, because that was a discussion between the representatives of the insurance company. They particularly didn't want that. They didn't want the jury to know what the underlying had paid or what the prepayment was. There was actually a prepayment in this case, too. An advance amount. And so if this was just straight up traditional kind of, you know, regular.
So under this verdict, then the insurer would have a right of subrogation to recover the $90,000 under this verdict?
Well, no, this was PIP.
Oh, this was PIP.
This is old PIP.
Right.
And I guess if you had it completely uninsured without, I mean, those were the old days. You're asking me to go way back.
No, that's just doesn't apply. The answer is your question's dumb. It doesn't apply. So continue on.
Your Honor, Your Honors, any other questions? I mean, we really feel that, again, based on kind of the new tack, which is if the new tack had been the original tack, which this very well couldn't have been, I mean, our answer would have been no, it very well could have been. And it makes perfect sense in how they got to there, because that's what you asked for. That's what they did. You left the jury kind of floundering in the dark, never saying, give us any money for this. Tell us what to do with this. And that's why we put in our original, or in the answer brief, that section, and albeit it didn't directly pertain to tort matters, but to the speculative and, you know, kind of unproven damages, because that's what was going on here. They were essentially saying, well, somebody should give us something for that, even though we didn't ask for it, and even though it wasn't in front of anyone. If Your Honor has no other questions, I really have nothing else to offer.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I have 2 minutes.
Still, let me just start with something, because yes. I think it was a point made by your colleague. Is the jury's return of special verdict A, under your theory, would automatically, if they choose special verdict A, they've automatically returned an arbitrary verdict under the facts of this case? That's basically your theory?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's consistent with Larson and Childs.
Well, no,
it's exactly right.
It's consistent with that, then.
Yes, I think it's completely inconsistent with the facts. Yes, Your Honor.
Is it the error in submitting special verdict A, then? That's an error that should have been objected to a trial.
In Larson and Childs both, one of the issues that they address is that in that kind of an instance, which is on all fours here, even if an objection was not raised, it is in the inherent authority of the appellate court to intervene to prevent a miscarriage of justice. If such a clarification should have been made. Now, frankly, if you look at it, this is inertial momentum why you get both A and B. It's just the way it's done as a routine matter of course. And maybe that's what this case needs to do, is stop that and say you can't give special verdict A when that's not an acceptable answer. And it, frankly, Your Honor, it's in the power of this panel to fix this problem. And that's what we're asking you to do. Now, as to a couple of quick points that a State Farm counsel made, he talked about nobody ever said anything about these back and shoulder pains. Right here, Your Honor, is a list of citations to the record to talk about. You got 9 or 10 different experts talked about. You were talking about back pain, neck pain, thoracic, lumbar, all the way down the line. That was consistently a theme throughout the trial. And the question was, here's the damages we think that it caused fibromyalgia. But if nothing else, it at least caused these things that never resolved. And even State Farm's own expert said those things did not resolve. He said that he thought they should have, but they did not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court thanks counsel for both sides and also appreciates your patience in waiting around this afternoon. It's been a long afternoon. This case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, and the bailiff may summon us.
All right. The court will be in recess, subject to call.